Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Yeah, it's not been too bad since I've been there. The last couple of years haven't been too bad. The worst thing is when the snow hardens and then goes kind of this weird grey, and then the sky's grey and everything's grey, and it's just a bit... Ugh.
We always struggle a bit with it in Norway, even though we're a summer league, because the first couple of weeks and the last couple of weeks in the season are a little bit rough up at Tromsø in particular.
Everyone remembers like Chelsea at Tromsø in the UEFA Cup, don't they?
Yeah. It's not uncommon that they have to get the tractor out at half time to sort of get the snow. Yeah, get the tractor out.
Antonio Conte is not in favour of that, by the way.
Alex Tetti once scored a goal up at Tromsø for Rosenborg and celebrated by making a snow angel.
That is at once a great story and also a great relief to me that 2020 is going to involve more Alex Tetti gold from you, Lars.
Of course.
That's fantastic. It is part of your personal brand,
it is.
Isn't it, really?
It really is.
So the big one, and, you know, the Bundesliga always gets things done ahead of time, doesn't it? Is Erling Braut Haaland to Dortmund.
Isn't it just?
Are we surprised?
Not really. There's always a part of you that thinks maybe the money and the fame and the pull of Old Trafford would maybe win out in the end. But I always thought, if you look back on his first move when he went from Molde, when he went abroad, they had offers from more financially lucrative offers and offers from bigger clubs than RB Salzburg. But they figured then that going to Austria and getting a foot through the door in the fizzy drink empire and just going to a place where they have this sort of track record of developing players, that was the best long-term move. And I thought, there's nothing to suggest that they're suddenly going to start thinking differently. I mean, I think there have been briefings from United that suggesting that they didn't want him anyway, which I think is one of those sort of, it's like in school when you ask someone to the dance and they reject you, then you do go and say how we just couldn't agree on a release clause and the percentages of any sell-on fee.
Image rights.
Couldn't really agree on that. No, but I think they were always going to look at what is the best move for him in the sporting sense, and going to a place like Dortmund where there is an obvious need for a number nine, where you're going to have, if you can choose between having sort of Marco Reus and Jadon Sancho supplying you and having Jesse Lingard supplying you, this is a pretty big difference, right? And he's going to come into a place where he has a very obvious place where he fits into the team. And I think Dortmund is obviously a massive, massive club, but there is slightly less scrutiny there than at United. If he had gone to United and had a barren run, you know, it's quite nasty. You know, you are in a big goldfish bowl there, and you've got the wrath of the internet, you know, bearing down on you at all time. Whereas with Dortmund, I think it's maybe a little bit more supportive atmosphere, if I think I'm right in saying.
I mean, Ryan, I don't know if I'm stretching it by saying... In terms of a functioning team, obviously United aren't quite there if we're comparing the two. Mm-hmm. Dortmund aren't quite a fully functioning team, but they're a fully functioning front line, and they'll be even more so with Haaland in it, because I think people look at the side of him, size of him, and especially people who haven't seen much of him, think made for English football, all this sort of stuff. He's someone who likes the ball in front of him. Mm. I think, you know, people have talked, and we've talked, haven't we, about Olivier Giroud being an interesting foil for those little 9.5 players that they've got. And they've got a lot of them, with, of course, Torgan Hazard joining Sancho, Royce, Goetze, etc., etc., etc. I think in terms of providing something different with size, Haaland has that. But he also has a technical side to him, because, you know, people talk about his goals in the Champions League. He's created goals in the Champions League as well, hasn't he? Yeah. I think it's a nice technical fit, isn't it?
I completely agree. I think I was actually quite in favour of Giroud going to Dortmund at one point when those rumours came out. I mean, purely from an aesthetic point of view, I'd like to see him in that lovely yellow shirt. Mm. But I think from a fit as well, I think it worked. And the problem that Dortmund have had, probably since Paco Alcácer started to get injury problems around the winter break last season, is that Lucien Favre has struggled to find a consistent balance to that forward line, and he's experimented in a number of ways. Royce has played there, Jakob Brun-Larsen played there, Gertz has played there, and I think even Marius Wolf played there at one point last season. And it's never really worked that well. Marco Royce has come out a number of times and said he doesn't like playing there, and then been played there anyway. And they've got by this season, since they switched to the back three, it actually allows them to play Sancho, Royce, Torgan Hazard as a fluid front three.
But lets Hakimi off defensive responsibility.
Yeah.
Just rampage.
Do you remember we were talking at the Dortmund-Leipzig game when Hakimi ended up as the most further... He ended up as the number nine at one point during that game, which I thought was brilliant.
The thing is, I don't actually think he intends to, but even in a very quick team, he's just quicker than everyone else.
When you're going
to
go, like, you're going to go.
It reminds me a little bit of Che Guevara in the Congo Diaries, where he charges into battle, he looks around, and all the soldiers are like 200 yards behind him.
Yeah,
I think it's just a similar thing, really.
Yeah, I've mentioned and slightly poo-pooed the briefings from Man United, but it's worth saying that on the financial aspect of the Haaland deal, it is entirely plausible that they wanted an arrangement with a release clause and some sell-on bonuses and some stuff that a club like Man United might have felt uneasy with. It's very possible that they've made an arrangement with Dortmund that he can eventually move on for a fee that's maybe slightly lower than what Man United would have wanted to hold up on. And there is a cynical...
They're a big stepping stone, but they're still a stepping stone.
I think that, I mean, if you call Dortmund a stepping stone, you do sound ridiculous, but there is an element...
I think
there is an element to that. And you can be cynical and say that that's Mino Raiola thinking, if he goes to United, then he's there and he's stuck there if he does well. If he goes to Dortmund and he does well, then there's another big transfer in it for me in a couple of years. Mm. And that's true, but it is also a logical sporting move to make before you go into a slightly harsher environment.
And the other logical sporting move we could have said was RB Leipzig. Now, we know, Ryan, that Leipzig and Salzburg are totally unconnected. We need to make that
absolutely
abundantly clear.
One is called RB.
Rasenball Sports, exactly. It was interesting to hear the Leipzig side of that, which to me sounded more plausible than the United side of that, when they said, look, at the moment, we've got Werner, Paulsen, Patrick Schick. It's not as if we can really guarantee him a place. They talked about it being a case of timing, that they would have preferred to take him in the summer and he wanted to move now. I mean, if you were given the option, say if you were Erling Braut Haaland and you'd have had the option of Dortmund or Leipzig now, if Leipzig had been up for that now, what would you have done?
I would have made the same move, I think. Yeah, I think...
But what, because it's an obvious need for Dortmund or because of the club or...
I think purely from a tactical fit, I think it fits better.
Yes.
I think he fits better in the Dortmund system than the Leipzig system, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think if I was him, which I would love to be that age and really good at football,
we'd all love to be that height.
Yeah, me especially, be the shortest man in the room. I just think that it would suit my skill set going there. And also, I just think that the environment and also the status of the club, no disrespect to RB Leipzig at all, but they aren't the most historical of clubs around. And I think
you're feeling it when you talk Dortmund, aren't you? It does get the blood pumping a little bit. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, there's not. I mean, in my opinion, and you guys have obviously been to a hell of a lot more stadiums around the world than I have, but it's so far, it's my favourite place to watch football, Dortmund, of anywhere I've been to.
You know what? That's never really changed for me. Like, however the team's doing, you know you're going to get a certain football experience. Mm. And I know it's kind of mocked to a degree because they've branded it, and that is part of modern football, and you just have to live with that. But you know, I think you do get a certain something from Dortmund that you don't get in other places.
There's certain things you can't fake, and I think that's the whole thing about the town and the history of the town and how important that club is to it. It's kind of, you can, it's like why players go to Newcastle, for example, how important the club is to that city. And I think that it's a really smart move for Dortmund, because I think it gives them options, or a option that they have desperately needed for a long time. And also, it's not just a big number nine. He is way more dynamic than a lot of other options that they would have been looking at.
And can he play centre-back, I suppose, is the other question. Lars, we were having an interesting chat. You were telling me the other day how, and I would never permit any praise of Egil Olsen on this podcast.
Still but, bitter, Andy.
A little bit.
Salty.
A little bit. It actually worked out okay for Wimbledon. You know, the dastardly forces who took him to Milton Keynes, if they'd have done it with a Premier League club, I mean, Olsen did us a favour. Really, but I think the interesting thing that you were talking to me about is that how Haaland is part of a whole generation of Olsen's players' kids.
Yeah, we're seeing this now, because another Norwegian transfer that was not maybe as didn't create the same headlines as Erling Haaland somehow, but Christian Tostvedt, Erik Tostvedt's son, is moving to Genk, which is quite a development, because 2 years ago he was essentially released by a club in Norway. He's just 20, so he's young, but the club he was at was like, nah, we're not really gonna put a lot of faith in you going forward, and he went back to Viking, to his hometown club. Viking, who had one of those, you know, the restorative relegation is one of the great myths. Like, yes, when clubs go down, we always say, oh, well, they can clear the decks now. And it's almost never true. Like, it's usually really hard, really expensive and difficult getting back up again. Viking were one of those clubs who spent more money than they should have spent for years and years until they just almost went bankrupt and had this bizarre season where they had to just sell everyone. And they got relegated and they went, all right, we're just going to have a lot of young players and a lot of local players. Mm. And that, for Christian Tostvedt, came in there when they're in the second tier, got promoted with them and had a great season in the top division in Norway now, and he's off to Genk. And as well, Emil Bohinen, Lars Bohinen's son, is also playing for Stabæk. He's looking very good. He's been linked with the rumoured to be interest from I think Sheffield United, Brighton, a couple of clubs like this.
Oh, that's so interesting.
It is quite fascinating.
So what sort of player is Christian Tostvedt? He's not a goalkeeper.
No, he's a sort of, I guess you'd call him a box-to-box midfielder. He's a midfielder who does get through a good amount of running, gets forward. I think he's just got 10 goals or something this season, so he's definitely a guy who gets forward. Whereas Bohinen is also quite a technical midfielder, as you'd expect.
So, Ryan, we talked about Leipzig and their plethora of forward options. Timo Werner has been linked with a move to Chelsea. It all seems a bit spurious to me. I mean, I asked you before about moves you would take and you wouldn't take. I don't want to build it up too much in your mind that you're an international footballer.
No,
but I know that if you were Timo Werner, Chelsea isn't a move you'd take. I mean, to me, I can't see why Leipzig would let him go at this very moment. And is he exactly the type of forward that Chelsea need as well?
I have to credit Grace on Football, who's a really good follow for stuff like this, and she tweeted that Chelsea are part of that this modern problem that every fan of every club believes that they always need a new striker no matter how many they've got. Mm. And I just don't think, I think you've seen with the Higuain experiment that, and Chelsea have done it a number of times where they've brought strikers in January, and it's just never really clicked, and it's been expensive.
Yeah.
And for someone like Timo Werner, like you said, why move now? His stock has never been higher. He's still super young. I think only Robert Lewandowski has scored more goals than him in the Bundesliga this season.
Well, he's going along at more than a goal a game, isn't he? The numbers are crazy.
Yeah, the goals per minute is off the charts. And obviously, the top scorer in German in the Bundesliga. Euro's coming up. Everything is going very swimmingly. They're top of the league.
Yeah, I was about to say, Leipzig have a real shot at winning the league as
exactly.
well. I mean, that's the other thing.
Yeah, they won the Herbstmeister, which was the winter championship. And why move? Yeah, I just don't see the point yet.
Well, I think as well, he's got to have an eye, as Lars says, not just on the rest of this season, but on Euro 2020. Because there's a lot of German players who need to put to bed what happened in 2018. But he was made to carry the can to some extent for what happened in the World Cup. Ridiculously, I thought, because I mean, if you're fast, at some point you will be made to play out wide. It doesn't mean it suits your game.
They weren't playing to their strengths at all, but that also feeds into the sort of gradual shift with the Mannschaft. They're trying to play slightly more direct. They're trying not to sort of not quite as many anemic passes about in midfield and slightly more vertical, and surely Werner should be a big part of that if he's in form. So it makes sense for him to just sort of keep doing what he's doing, basically. Yeah.
And it's a huge tournament for Germany, and it always is, but it's an even bigger one this time after what happened in the World Cup. And this new wave of German players that are coming through that are now the centerpieces, if you like, of that team. So you have people like Kai Havertz, Julian Brandt, all of these new players who were there and thereabouts for in the squads, but they weren't really given the chances over the old guard. Obviously, Jogi Löw famously cleared out a lot of that. Mesut Özil retired, and you have players like Serge Gnabry, Timo Werner, who are really, really important, and Leroy Sané as well, if and when he was fit.
It'll be an interesting second half of the season for him. Do we still imagine him pitching him up at Bayern?
I think he'll end up there, I think.
This window, do we think?
Maybe not this window. Can you imagine some sort of big sort of winger carousel or switcheroo where Sané goes to Bayern and City pushes the Jadon Sancho button and gets him back?
Oh, that's an interesting idea.
That would be quite a thing in the summer, wouldn't it? I think that would make sense for a lot of parties.
That is an interesting idea. I suppose the only reason you could make for Sané to go now, when Bayern make it happen, it will be a heinously expensive deal. I guess if you've got wide players anyway, which Bayern do have, and they're going to be required to press Perisic a bit more into service than perhaps they would have wanted to because of the injury to Kingsley Coman. And I think long term, when you're looking at Sané, Coman's fitness is an issue, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, because it's something that comes up again and again and again. But if there's no pressure on Sané to start and play every week immediately, if he's got half a season of acclimatisation, and you could argue, you know, City have already moved on anyway, maybe that would make sense time-wise?
I mean, actually, I don't think he will go now, just to clarify. I think he probably will go in the summer, but I mean, when's his return from injury? Because he's still quite a way away, right?
We always expect 6 months.
It was done in August. So maybe February. Yeah, maybe. It's not very Bayern-like, I don't
know. Nothing like
Bayern,
a freezing German winter.
If you're Bayern and you are going to spend a lot of money on this deal, why bring him in when he's straight back from injury? Why just let him stay at City for a couple of months and see what sort of shape he comes back in? Because you don't.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
And also, I think certain other decisions at Bayern might affect the Sané thing as well, because they have to make a decision on Coutinho at some point and other players. So I think that waiting until the summer seems very Bavarian.
Yeah, we have seen a big German player move that I don't know if it's quite slipped under the radar, but it's not as big a move as it would have been a year or two ago. Julian Weigl going to Benfica from Borussia Dortmund. Now, Dortmund said they let him go in recognition of his service and because he wanted to go, and because it does affect them depth wise. I know that's something we talked about, isn't it, Ryan? But it's an interesting one because he's gone from being rated at 40 million, probably after a season at Dortmund, and being an apparent Pep Guardiola favourite, to taking what I know Benfica are historically a great club and all the rest of it. The Liga NOS is not the same level as the Bundesliga. It is at best a sideways step.
Yes. Yeah. I was a little bit surprised by this move, if I'm being honest. There were a few rumours that he was potentially available.
And it's around about the 20 million euro mark, we should say that as well.
Yeah, and Hertha were interested in him. Well, they're interested in everyone at the moment.
They are.
But the Benfica thing was surprising, and also the timing, because Dortmund, like you said, they're light there, and he's been playing games a lot recently with the injuries to Axel Witsel.
Played a lot of last season at centre-back, of course.
Yeah, when they were light there before Mats Hummels came in, and Thomas Delaney's been injured as well, so...
Well, you wonder to what extent this means they're really going to go for Julian Brandt in midfield going forward. I mean, this could be part, even if it's a very different player, because Witsel is obviously nailed, and then there's the question who plays next to him. And if they see Brandt as a viable candidate to do that going forward, then I guess maybe that means they feel they can let him go.
It's a really good point, actually, Lars, I think, because I think we always assume in this situation, when you're in the transfer market. You're talking more about trading. You're talking about like for likes. And it doesn't always have to be like that, does it? Because, I mean, we look at Weigl, for example. People wonder where he would fit in a Benfica. Well, the interesting thing is Benfica have been playing without an orthodox defensive midfielder for the last couple of months. Adel Taarabt has been playing in the middle, normally with Pizzi. He's been playing pretty well.
He's still doing random nutmegs for no reason, I expect.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't just take it out of him.
A little bit closer to his own penalty box now.
Of course.
While screening the back four.
Exactly. What could work better? But, I mean, Weigl's an interesting one, isn't he? Because he's one of those kind of metronomic, modern defensive midfielders. He's not someone who's going to pile into loads of tackles, but he's got excellent positioning. I think that's why Pep Guardiola was attached to him and attracted to him in the first place. He does have that kind of semi-Xabi Alonso vibe about him. But, I mean, it's funny because when we talk about his value dropping and the clubs he's linking with becoming like further and further from the absolute summit of European football. I mean, he's not had an easy ride at Dortmund because he suffered quite badly from the Peter Bosz era, and he suffered quite badly in the Peter Stöger era as well. He didn't look quite right. I think it's fair to say Lucien Favre's never totally fancied him, and he's played in different spots. I wonder if the game that really finished him in terms of Dortmund, you remember the Paderborn game where they were 3-0 down? Correct me if I'm wrong, that was maybe the last one that he played at centre-back.
I think so.
And they've got a very, very fast front three with Strelly Mamba and Kai Pröger. And a couple of times, I think it was Pröger, went past him, gave him like a 10-yard start and absolutely flew past him. He looked as slow as Zlatan. Don't worry, we're coming to him in a minute.
But can I just say, I'm going to word this very carefully because I think these players are really important in the right system, and I think they're a type of player that often gets dismissed in England in particular.
Yeah.
But with these sort of metronomic midfielders, there's a very fine line between being a masterful distributor of the ball and a crucial part of the system and just being a guy who doesn't give you a lot physically, who doesn't win a lot of tackles, who doesn't score goals, doesn't give you assists, and just passes the ball sideways a lot, right? And that's what, and I wonder if at one point Julian Weigl sort of went from column A and slipped over into column B a little bit.
Is it Mats Hummels coming back? I mean, that's a genuine question, because I think if you look at the centre of that team, I think it's quite interesting. You think how fast the front part of the team is at Dortmund, and then you go a bit further back and it gets slower and slower and slower. You think in the back half of the team, unless you're talking about Akanji, who I think his athleticism has made him survive quite a poor run of form, and Zagadou, who's come back in and looked great. I don't know if he's just looked great in comparison to the other defenders. Apart from that, you're thinking about maybe playing Roman Bürki at centre-back because he's a bit faster.
He usually ends up there anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
But I do wonder if, you know, taken away from the technical side of Weigl, I do wonder how much that stint at centre-back really knocked him confidence-wise. And like you said, playing under the two Peters, Bosch and Stöger. Dortmund have gone through such a huge shift in systems over the last two or three seasons, really. And even if you go a little bit further back under Tuchel, that's a huge transition between those four managers in terms of how they want to play. And I think a lot of players have fallen foul of not really fitting in anywhere or fitting in for a few months and then not after that.
That's true. He's still very young. I think it's easy to
24.
24, yeah. It's easy to forget that. And this is quite a Benfica-y deal, I think, because not only, I mean, they're delighted that they've managed to pull it off. I'm not sure if they thought it was possible at the beginning. The first price they were quoted a couple of months ago was 35 million euros, and they've managed to bring it down quite a bit from there. But if they can get him into a good run of form, and you look at players like Matic, Axel Witsel, how they recreated themselves there. I mean, Witsel really recreated himself there. He created himself into a whole new different type of player. They will manage to spin him on for a lot of money, I think maybe a year and a half down the line. And, you know, I think people still think of Porto as the transfer market kings to an extent. Well, that's clearly not the case anymore. I mean, they're still struggling from the beating they got from FFP. You look at the fact that I've still managed to let players, good players, go for nothing, like Yassin Brahimi and Hector Herrera, who's started quite well at Atletico Madrid. Whereas Benfica, over the last 10 years, they've been absolutely peerless in the transfer market, and this could be another big success for them.
It's not hard to imagine Bayern. Like, if he has 18 really good months at Benfica and Bayern, it's like, yeah, well, this is the metronome in midfield. You have to go get him.
They'll like use exactly that phrase.
50 million or something. Yeah. Off we go.
I was going to say Bayern or Atleti 2022, just ending up in that Atleti midfield.
Yeah, it's just at the point, I think, when Marcos Llorente thinks, right, I'm going to get a start now. Next day, Atletico announced signing. It's just that up there holding the shirt next to Simeone.
Just quickly from one more thing on Dortmund, though, I do wonder whether that is maybe the reason they've let him go is maybe because of the Haaland signing, and they've thought about maybe that signing actually allows them to potentially reconfigure that midfield, because Favre's been switching to a 3-4-3 recently because of Alcacer's injury.
Yes.
And with Brandt really thriving, I think as each game goes by, he gets better and better in that deeper midfield role. I think maybe you could see a potential going to a 4-3-3 kind of thing.
Which, by the way, wasn't it Peter Bosz who started playing Brandt centrally?
There,
at Leverkusen. It all comes back to Bosz.
It always does. It always does.
The genius.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Ryan, tell me about Hertha. A lot of excitement surrounding... Are they finally a big city club? I mean, they're certainly getting their names in the right columns, in the right newspapers, aren't they? I mean, look at this. Draxler, Xhaka, Strootman.
Yeah, although I do wonder if any of them will end up there by the end of January.
Yes.
Well, they've signed the guy from Stuttgart, the Argentinian midfielder, haven't they?
Yes.
I can never whose name escapes me.
That's Casibar.
Yes,
that's it.
Yes, that's him. Yeah. He's gone. So maybe. Oh, well.
Well, it's big city for him.
Yeah.
I think we can say that anyway.
Oh, Stuttgart's a lovely town, though.
Yeah, it is. It is. Drax is a really interesting one, though, isn't he? Because he's kind of fallen in between the cracks at Paris Saint-Germain this season. I mean, there's clearly mutual interest between him and Hertha. We talked about Werner and Euro 2020, and it's clear that there's an interest for Draxler, and they'd have to be to do more work for quite a lot less money, because even with the Lars Windhorst cash injection, and we'll talk about that in a minute.
Windfall.
The Windhorst windfall. Exactly. I think that there is, a reason why Draxler would go there. My only question, say if this deal were to come off, how quickly would he get bored of it, like he got bored of things at Wolfsburg?
Well, I would say that...
Like, of being at a moderate level. Because let's face it, even if they get him, they're not going to qualify for the Champions League, are they?
No, they're doing that thing that all clubs that have new money do and go for anyone who's available for around 20 to 25 million euros, basically. And then in 5 years' time, they'll sell them all and go for the big guys kind of thing. Mm. But I think in terms of being bored, I think Berlin offers a lot more than Wolfsburg does, just from a lifestyle point of view.
You have a point.
And there is a difference for someone just being at Wolfsburg because of reasons and being a crucial cog in a sort of resurgent, ambitious Hertha side, right? Mm,
mm. Yeah, I mean, the thing about Hertha, which I think is interesting, is that it's the first time I can remember, and I might be wrong here, but that quite a historic club in Germany has been the beneficiary of some new money to this level. Yeah. I mean, it is the biggest deal of its kind financially in German football history. The two previous before that were when Audi and Allianz purchased shares in Bayern.
Yes.
And it's massively blown them out of the water.
Yeah, and in terms of proportion, what Windhorst has taken on is far greater than what, say, Audi or Adidas took on.
Yeah, he's taken the maximum amount of shares that you can take according to the 50 plus one rule, which is actually 49.9%, weirdly.
Yeah.
So it's not 50 plus 0.1.
but not as catchy, is it?
But I guess what I'd want to ask you, since you live in Berlin, if you know nothing about football and you just look at the European football landscape and you look at areas where there's just isn't a big football club where there really should be one. I mean, obviously you look at Hertha, right? Because Berlin is a huge place. It's got a good sort of young and vibrant sort of vibe. And there's a lot of, you know, potential. They can't all be Union Berlin hipsters, right? I mean, there's a lot of potential. You'd think on
there's not the room in the stadium.
On the surface of it, you would think if there's one place that's ripe, if you put a bit of good money into there, if you run it smartly and you can create an exciting team that people want to watch, there should be a touch paper there waiting to be lit. Is that true or is there more to it?
I do think that's true. And I think the thing is that Hertha are actually a huge club. They're just in a stadium that's too big for them, if that makes sense. They're a really unique club. I can't really think of another club like them in the world they won a German championship back in the 30s, pre-Bundesliga. They were one of the founding members of the Bundesliga. They dropped down the leagues. We're playing in Gesundbrunnen at this really famous old stadium called Die Plumper, which is now gone. And they moved to the Olympiastadion, which is, as you know, you've been there, it's quite a hard place to fill for a start. I mean, they average around 45,000, I think, to 50.
There are two massive issues, really, with the Olympiastadion, aren't there, Ryan? I think that there's the fact that, for example, when they, I think their last game before the winter break, when they played Borussia Mönchengladbach, and Gladbach can, on a Saturday night, and Gladbach can bring like 20,000 fans because there's the space for them to do so. I think that's an issue. The second issue, maybe a slightly more obvious one, if we're going to quote the late, great Johan Cruyff, it's too far away from the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. I was actually at the Gladbach game, and the last time I was there before that was the Dortmund game, which was Klinsmann's first game in charge.
Yeah.
And the Dortmund game is always full, and you can see yellow shirts peppered throughout the home end as well, which is quite standard for German football anyway. It's rare that you will get strict fan separation, maybe apart from Dortmund Schalke and a couple of other more heated derbies. But there was so much empty space at the Gladbach game, which was quite surprising because it was a big game. It was, you know, Gladbach were, well, until a couple of hours before, they could have finished top of the Bundesliga going into the winter break. But there was still a really great atmosphere, and that's something that Hertha fans deserve credit for. They do generate an atmosphere whilst being in a huge cavernous stadium. It's strange because it is a really beautiful stadium architecturally. It's got a very ropey kind of history because of its conception. It was obviously, you know, for the Olympics and all of this stuff. But as a building itself, it's really beautiful and it doesn't really look like any other stadium in world football. However, it's really hard to generate an atmosphere there. And Ante Kovac actually said earlier on in the season, who was the Hertha coach before Klinsmann, that a new stadium would get them 6 points a season. I think it was after they played Bremen.
Sometimes win, sometimes lose. I have many difficult. Mami work 12 hours, 15 hours a day in the VAC. My job and my players is not touch.
Lars, all our 2020 dreams are set to come true.
Yes.
Edinson Cavani to Atletico. Okay.
And that is actually all of our dreams, and maybe we should ask some questions of ourselves.
It really is. I remember interviewing him last time I interviewed him for TV. He turned up like 2 hours late. He just put his hand out and shook his hair, and I was like, that's great. Great to meet you. Great to meet you. All the annoyance just ebbed away, just like that, with one little shake of the locks. But it looks like it's unlikely to happen this January because he's got 6 months left on his contract. Paris Saint-Germain will want a fee. Atletico still have to clear some stuff off their wage bill. But they seem to have come to at least terms in principle on what would be a contract going forward, maybe from this summer. I mean, we've talked about this extensively before, but I mean, this says that it's going to be the end for Diego Costa, doesn't it? And like, maybe there's a way.
You said they had to clear some things off the wage bill. I think that's a very mean some things, Diego. Some things, Costa.
Well, of course, if he's not going to be fit till the end of January, that they're going to struggle to shift him now. Paris aren't going to let Cavani go for nothing, and even less to a Champions League competitor. But this is the move we've all been waiting for. If it happens, will it work?
It's certainly something we wanted to see happen because...
When you say we, you mean me and you.
And other people, smart people who listen to this podcast. because of his age, it's easy to think, all right, he's 32 now, he gets injured sometimes. Off to the MLS you go, or off to China, or off to the Middle East, or wherever you get your kicks. And the Inter Miami link has always been sort of looming in the background. But I've always felt that it's too soon for him to go. Like, he's in very good nick. And like, yes, okay, it's the odd injury, but when he's playing, you see physically he's in good shape, he gets around the pitch still, and he still has football at a very high level left in him. I feel very confident in saying that, and I think he's such a natural fit for Atleti because he really does get through the work. And if there's one thing we've learned this season, is that you can change some of the players, but Atleti are still going to be Atleti. We thought there was a bit of a, obviously with Griezmann going and with Rodri going and stuff, but there was also something the old guard left this summer, and we spoke a lot about it. You know, it's more of a sort of Thomas Lemar and João Félix now than, you know, Juan Fran. Yeah. And him. And we always thought, okay, maybe it's going to change. Maybe there'll be more attacking, but that hasn't really happened. They're still very much the Diego Simeone team. And we're seeing that a lot of forward players come in and they struggle a little bit to settle. And I guess it's more sensible for them to go out in the market and instead of finding talented guys and trying to turn them into Simeone players, maybe just find guys who are already Simeone players that just haven't been united with Simeone yet.
It was quite funny, actually, in Portugal to celebrate the end of the year. I think it was A Bola, the newspaper, gave João Félix a Portuguese Player of the Year award, and he stood there in the Estádio da Luz with it, holding it with his big lovely grin, and that they asked him, what are your ambitions for 2020? And he's like, oh yeah, probably need to learn to run a bit more. It's like, right, did you not figure that out six months ago?
Yeah, but it can be really hard to find, because of course when Atleti came up, of course they've had some really talented players there, but it was also because the sort of first Simeone team of like the Gabi and Juan Fran and these dudes, right?
Who are not
obviously top players. They're good players, but they're not players who would probably ever play for a team in that echelon, unless they came up through one. And it can be really hard now that they have the finances and the prestige to attract like world-class talent. It can be really hard to find world-class talent with that sort of work ethic and that sort of willingness to sacrifice themselves for the team all the time.
Yeah, and I think when you're Atletico and they've moved stadium, and we've talked before about how much their personality was caught up in their barrio, really, and how Simeone talked about that all the time, and about with a team of the workers and with a team of our barrio and all that sort of stuff. And then you move, then there's such a profound turnover of, as you say, not just good players but key players, part of the Atleti DNA, like Gabi, like Fernando Torres, and all those sort of players, Felipe Luis. I think it is normal to have this sort of identity crisis. Of course, the one thing that the two things, really, I suppose, that we haven't pointed out about Cavani: A, they need that someone to put the chances in the back of the net, and B, he's someone who's really experienced. And when we talk about really experienced, Zlatan is back.
Seamless, Andy. It's like you've never been away.
It's like I'm sitting in Marcus Bella's chair.
Ibra is heading to Milan, and which is because Milan did go through that phase, didn't it, of being like the retirement home to the stars, and just this idea that the Milan lab could sort of coax another couple of years out of anyone, and that was a philosophy that maybe didn't work as well for them as they thought it would.
I think that's the thing. It's really worrying. If you look back over history at the Milan legends, and you know, the last time they won the league, he was a key part of that.
Yeah.
Let's be clear. He never wanted to go to Paris Saint-Germain in the first place, and he was really pissed off when they got rid of him. If you look at the ones who've gone back, you look at Hullet, Kaká, Shevchenko, Donadoni, never worked the second time.
Yeah, and just older guys they've had. Like, they got Ronaldinho away after his sell-by dates. They had Ronaldo there when his legs were not good. But listen, I'm trying to... So I'm one of those loopy weirdos who actually do watch quite a bit of MLS, even though I'm sort of based in Europe and I should be sleeping. I do watch quite a bit of it. And
Sleeps for quitters.
It's been an odd one for Ibra. Of course, he scored a bunch of goals. And if you look at his highlight reel from his time at LA Galaxy, there are some extraordinary moments there. And he's still really strong and he's still very agile. So if you get the ball anywhere near him in the box, he can execute a sort of absurd volley or something. He can trap it.
Is that a point, though, if you get the ball near him?
And this is the concern, right? Because he is really slow. Like, I mean, and I'm really intrigued to see. He is not fast anymore. And you had Lee sort of... They had a funny team towards the second half of the season, LA Galaxy, because you have, like, Christian Pavon they brought in. And they have, like, Alessandrini there. So you had, like, these wingers sort of bursting up the field with the ball. And then they had to sort of stop and... Ibra, you coming? It was like, oh, dum-pa-dum-pa-dum, here comes Ibra into the box. And then now we can cross it in. Because it was like this sort of, he's not very fast at all, Ibra, he is. But I don't want to write him off because he's still such a, his qualities are really difficult for defenders to deal with. Like a guy who's that tall, who's quite nimble, who can trap the ball from surprising angles. Like if you can just whack it at him at any height and he can pull some sort of odd jiu-jitsu move to get it under control. And I think he can be valuable. It's just, I don't know, bringing in 38-year-old Ibra.
Well, it's an expression of where Milan are at the moment. I guess the question I would ask is, are we looking at it in a slightly sort of off-kilter perspective? Because, of course, the on-pitch stuff is important. But for me, if I think about the later years of Ibrahimovic, and certainly from Paris Saint-Germain onwards, if you speak to players who've played with him, give or take Lucas Moura, who was absolutely terrified of him when they played together at Paris Saint-Germain, it is about the fact that, you know, he's got this sort of facade of being this ogre, this self-interested guy. Actually, he's a really terrific leader. He's really good with the young players. Is he something that Milan need off the pitch more than they need on the pitch at the moment?
I think that's a good shout, because I don't think he's going to all of a sudden catapult them into the top four, for example. Mm. If they were going to do that, they should have gone after the other MLS superstar, Carlos Vela. I think he would have taken them to Champions League success. No, he's quick as well, Carlos. Really.
Yeah. Yeah. He's also having a time of his life. Exactly. Why would he want to join a Midland Milan team?
Leave. but yeah, I think that Milan are in such a weird place at the moment with this kind of transition at board level, and Gazidis coming in, and just some of the signings have been really, really questionable.
None of them have worked apart from Teo Hernandez, who played in a position where they already had Ricardo Rodriguez.
Yes. So good to have a little bit of depth, but it doesn't really matter.
If you're part of the team.
Yeah. But I guess they're stacked at left back or right back, you know.
I guess there's quite a few guys there who are like under 25 and guys who are not very experienced at the top level who can maybe some of the Ibra magic will be good for them. It's also having a centre forward who's that static as well. It does affect how you play as well. And there's always a danger if you have Ibra. The temptation is just to pass it to Ibra at all times. I mean, you see throughout his career, teams who have Ibra, it tends to be all about Ibra. And do you want your team to be all about a 38-year-old Ibra? Like, I'm not sure that's necessarily a good thing.
Do you remember that time where a Portuguese journalist approached Cristiano Ronaldo when he was on a walk? And
that was amazing.
He took his dictaphone and like threw it in the river.
Yeah.
That is what Luca Toni has just done with his iPhone.
This guy! Och Zlatan gör alla målen. Och han gör cirkuskonster som är överjordiska.
Talking of deja vu all over again, Monaco firing Leonardo Jardim for the second time in 14 months. I think the estimate is 13 million euros in payoffs now, which is quite decent. But, you know, they're not in favour of history repeating. So it's not as if they've gone out there and appointed a coach who's never been in the hot seat of a top European club before. Welcome, Robert Moreno.
How much do you want to bet that Jardim will be back there at some point this season or next?
It's an interesting point, isn't it?
I might go and stick a tenner on that. I'm not even a betting man.
I mean, you know what? I must admit, I had a little look when I saw Jardim get fired and think, you know what? Leon, Rudy Garcia, it's not exactly the perfect fit. Maybe Jardim could be one in the bank for them going into next season. But Jardim, it's been falling apart for a while.
Yeah, and what went wrong, Andy? I'd like to hear your take on this.
Well, it went really... The point where it reached a point of no return is where they lost 3-0 at home to Lille in the Coupe de la Ligue. And 3-0 was incredibly flattering. They were so bad. And it was like the nadir of a series of quite poor performances. What's put the pressure on Jardim this season is the fact that they've recruited a lot of expensive players. And, you know, you look at some of the ones that have gone in there, added to some of the investment that they've made before. Of course, they pushed the boat out for Vincent Ben Yedder. That was one. And in fact, that's been one of the functioning parts of the team. The fact that Slimani and Ben Yedder have formed a very, very good front two together. But they've been a bit of a mess elsewhere. The ones who remain from the 2017 title triumph are not quite on it. Kamil Glick's not the player he was. But I think that Jardim has been made to carry the can by the people upstairs, because, you know, they moved on from Vadim Vasiliev, who was running the club day-to-day. Rybovalev wanted him to run the club day-to-day. And he's replaced him with Oleg Petrov and a couple of other guys around Petrov who are obviously still have that Russian connection, but don't have really any experience in the football world, which I think is a difficulty. Now, people are saying in France that in the immediate aftermath of this, Petrov's position has been reinforced a little bit because he's taken the brave decision to remove Jardim, and it's cost the club a lot of money because they've had to pay him off again. They've had to bring in not just Robert Moreno, but like, say, Mauricio Pochettino would do. He's brought in five staff with him. So they've had to pay off other staff and bring in a whole load of new staff as well. But if it doesn't go well, people are going to be looking at Petrov and especially Rybovalev again and thinking, well, you know, where is this club going? There's a lot of talent there. But I think to expect a rookie manager, albeit a rookie manager who really impressed in his first press conference, who's got a very clear idea of how he wants to play the game, who I think is at least partly responsible for a lot of the successes of Luis Enrique at Celta, with Barcelona, and especially with Spain. The philosophy is appealing. I think the fact that he said in the opening press conference, you know what, do you look at the dominant team in this league, it's Paris Saint-Germain, and their style is based on keeping the ball, and that's exactly what I want to do. That sounds great, but doing that with the disparate parts that they've got, it's going to take time.
Well, this is the thing that concerns me about the fit, is that going forward isn't really Monaco's problem. I don't think. It's more defensive. I think only three teams outside of the bottom three have conceded more goals than they have in the league. Mm. And considering they're, what, sixth, seventh, sorry.
Bring Naldo back?
Yeah, exactly. I just thought that if they were going to make this move, is the fit, you know, he's going for someone who, you know, could, like Moreno, who, like you say, is his first club job. Is he really renowned for steadying stuff up at the back? Because like I say, I don't think they're that bad going forward, Monaco, considering they've had such a huge turnover of players, personnel in the last few years as well.
That's true. I mean, I guess you would say like he's part of that movement with Luis Enrique with Spain, where he made them a bit more tough and a bit more practical. And it's interesting, when he's written about his works, and my God, does he like to talk about his philosophy. I think the fact that his ideas are a bit of a twist on 4-4-2 maybe suits Monaco, because as I said, the best functioning part of the team is Slimani and Ben Yedder. And if you can work around that And maybe that's interesting.
Yeah, you've got... I can be honest, Andy, I haven't watched that many Monaco games this season, but they've got some decent players, and it's, yeah, it's quite an expensive squad, like you say.
Really expensive.
I mean, assuming that they're paying the full whack for the players they've got on loan, the salary-wise, which I would figure they're probably something close to that. Like, having, like, Andre Silva and Bakayoko and running around in midfield with Golovin, like, there's a lot of money going into this. I mean, they should be closer to...
They will never get past that apex of... Earlier this season, where I don't know, it was only about 3 or 4 weeks ago, did you see that? Where they were substituting Balde Keita, and they raised the number 14 for him. Bakayoko's own number, old number. Yes. He starts to walk off the pitch. He's number 6 now. I mean, that was pretty good. But I'm really interested to see how Moreno goes. I mean, we've seen one coach who didn't really have that much experience at club level, and certainly not successful experience at club level, in Julen Lopetegui, who's actually done pretty well with Sevilla this season. So it's not totally impossible. And also, I think, you know, we talked about Milan history and how guys coming back, legends coming back, don't really do that well. Interestingly, we can have some recency bias and think, well, it went completely wrong with Thierry Henry, therefore it will go completely wrong with Robert Moreno. But basically, when Arsene Wenger arrived in 1987, he had 3 middling seasons at Nancy under his belt, the last one in which they were relegated. So you look at him, you look at Deschamps, who had no experience at all. Even Jean Tigana only had a little bit of, I think, what, a season at Lyon under his belt or whatever. So it's not impossible that it could happen. I just think they need to get it sorted upstairs. And when we're talking about stability, Hatem Ben Arfa back on the trading block this winter.
My God, the links today, Andy. Oh my God.
I know, I'm having a nightmare. I'm sorry, it's only the 2nd of January. But Ben Arfa has been free after getting free from his contract from Rennes 6 months ago.
He's, ultimate free roll.
Yeah, exactly. And, according to sources... he's been looking pretty good despite having only been training with a personal trainer. He is 32 now. I mean, he's been linked, as I know you were chuckling away in our production meeting about the first name that came up for you was Galatasaray.
Obviously.
Fenerbahce.
It seems like something that'll have to happen.
In the mix as well. What about a return to Lyon? Because they are lacking that bit of creative edge at the moment. And it's very interesting. You know, you were talking right at the beginning about... Manchester United asking someone out to the prom and them saying no. Well, it's very much like a school disco between Lyon and Hatem Ben Arfa at the moment, because you know, they're, as you, I think you were saying to me, they're studying the possibility of bringing him back in, which basically means Jean-Michel Aulas is thinking about it. Hatem Ben Arfa, I think he's thinking about it, but neither will make the first move. But this could be an interesting idea, couldn't it? Him going back to the beginning.
It's a lovely mental image that they're stood like in each and separate ends of
just like
of
tapping like their feet to the music
of the big sort of PE hall, and there's like really dreadful music picked by one of the teachers happening, and sort of like a sort of a bad disco ball thing happening.
Yeah, you leave Rudy Garcia alone,
sort of standing there. No, I just think as an emergency Memphis stand-in, since you know we've been cruelly deprived of Memphis's talents for a good period now due to injury. If they need some sort of attacking wild card who can do things that are completely off the wall, unexpected and strange, and who doesn't have the strongest sort of collective qualities, to put it that way, but the team's kind of used to carrying Memphis in that regard, you know, maybe a short-term Ben Arfa isn't quite as loopy as it sounds.
Do you like the idea?
I really love it, actually. I think it's a good time as well, because they're not in a spot where they're really contending, so the pressure's kind of off. They've lost, obviously, like you said, Memphis Depay and Jeff Rennie Adelaide as well, which he was having a really good season.
He looked good.
Obviously, he's not going to cost as much as he would have done once upon a time as well. And again, I think he's someone who knows the club, someone who can come in, be that almost like a little bit of a mentor, which is a weird thing to say about Ben Arfa, I think.
I thought you were going to say come in, upset a load of people.
Well, maybe, but you know, he's one of those people. We have, Musa and I on our podcast have this thing called the Theo Walcott theory, where people are prospects and then they're 30, and it's really confusing.
Yes, I
still assumed he was 26 for some reason.
Funnily enough, I think he's still in that headspace. He still sees himself as a potential Ballon d'Or winner.
Older than Diego Costa.
Wow. That's pretty incredible.
Who seems to have been 31 for 4 years, by the way.
But also, I mean, at Rennes last season, he wasn't, I mean, he scored some goals.
He had his moments.
Completed more dribbles per game than any other player in Liga.
I thought you were going to say at Rennes then, and I was like, "Wow,
no, any other? He's the most successful dribbler in all of Liga, ahead of Alain Saint-Maximin. So I don't know, maybe he could contribute something.
I like the sound of that. So what are we going to be watching this weekend, fellas? Games of the week?
Well, I've spoken about him already. It seems far-fetched that he would be playing already, but who knows? I will have to watch the Milan game Milan playing Samp, in case Ibra time, in case he gets ready. I mean, he's not even been officially presented, I don't think. He's doing the idea for that to happen tomorrow on Friday.
Yeah.
But, you know, Ibra is a physical specimen. He is a freak of nature. Who knows? Maybe he can come straight in and play for Milan as they take on Samp.
So what day is that on?
It's on Monday.
Italian public holiday. Come on.
All right. There we go. That's right. And well, Ibra, I think it's a difficult time for him. I mean, he's a statue. He keeps getting vandalized. We had earlier, they tried to set fire to it. For a while, there was a toilet seat on his arm. And now someone has successfully lopped off the nose.
The ultimate indignity.
The Ibra statue has no nose. So, I mean, he's...
He's nothing without his nose.
He's got something to prove now.
Oh, that is absolutely brutal. Ryan, pick a game of the week that ends with a less upsetting tale.
I am going to go for Real Sociedad against Villarreal Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock GMT.
You still got Carlos Vela on the mind?
I was actually going to say Santi. Santi's on my mind. Santi's always on my mind. Although, you know, 5th versus 10th in La Liga might not sound unbelievable, but only Barcelona and Real Madrid have scored more goals than these two this season. So hopefully there will be goals, which now means it's going to be 0-0.
Yeah, but
that game at the Anoeta Sunday afternoon, I think that'll be a crack.
Real Sociedad are proper fun to watch as well, aren't they?
Also, Martin Ødegaard. Martin Ødegaard, one of the best players in the league this season.
He is one of the best players in the league this season.
Yeah, I'd say it's more of the Nacho Monreal factor, personally. You know, no, they're really fun to watch. And since they've redeveloped the Anoeta, the atmosphere there just looks incredible. It's one on the list to go to, I think.
Something that Hertha could take note of?
Absolutely, get closer to the pitch, lads.
Yeah, absolutely. For my game of the week, I'm going to go for a classical between Sporting and Porto. That is on Sunday at 5:30. And do you know what? I think you can actually watch that for free in the UK on Free Sports.
Wow.
I mean, it'll be like... I think it is available in HD. I always used to say that when you watch Free Sports, it was a bit like that thing where you fall asleep with your contact lenses in, have a brief moment of thinking, oh my God, I can see. And then it all goes a bit blurry. But no, I do think Free Sports is available in HD now. And, you know, football for free, you can't knock it. It's absolutely fantastic. It was brilliant with La Liga at the end of last season. And much more of it, I think. I think sometimes we forget how important that is to people. But it's going to be an interesting game because... Sporting are in the throes of a financial crisis. They might have to have a bit of a fire sale as January goes on, which is why Bruno Fernandes' name has come up again, despite the fact that Jose Mourinho said that Spurs wouldn't be able to afford him. New price? Maybe. Bit of January sales. We'll have to wait and see. But it will be one that Porto have to win. There's a bit of a gap between them and Benfica at the top because Benfica have been excellent recently. Porto, a few changes for them in January, I expect. And Sergio Conceição finally came out about that, what happened in the tunnel at Jamor, and he said he didn't hit anyone. And, you know, I'm going to take him at his word, quite
frankly.
Is that
enough for you, Andy?
if only because I'm a little bit scared of him.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.